This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, what's going to happen in a couple hours from now? Will anything be said or unsaid that surprises us during breakup day? Will anybody be like, nope, I'm not talking to the media? Will anybody spill the beans and say, you know what, this sucks, we got to do this, 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 and this? Anything going to surprise us in that room?
I think the strongest message, honestly, is going to come from the top. I think Jim Rutherford's going to get up there and say something, not ridiculous, but I think definitive. I think if, let me put it this way. When I sit down to write a story for tomorrow's Post-Gazette and online today, I'm going to be writing about Jim. I don't think there's any way I cannot be writing about Jim. Like, I don't expect Gino to talk. I don't expect Phil to talk. Probably not Hornquist. Like, these guys usually don't participate in that sort of thing. And as such, we're going to be left with maybe Letang, Sid, or whatever. To me, the most interesting thing is Rutherford. When you say, does this team have an identity? What are you doing? What are you going to do this summer? You know, he's the type of guy that's going to say, like, yep, I'm going to trade a lot of significant players. You know, he's going to say something that is very unmistakably kind of brash.
Is he going to do that as much to shake up the players as he is to essentially say to the rest of the league, hey, my phone's ready.
Yeah.
Give me a call.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. And I think it's to do both. And I think it's also Jim wants to win. And this team didn't win. It didn't come anywhere close to winning. If you look back at their season, there were a bunch of like trouble spots that we probably all should have seen this coming. I think everybody kind of wanted to believe it would be better than it actually is. And so, and there's also the logistics of a salary cap that he's going to have to do something to get under the cap. So for myriad reasons, I think Jim's going to, you know, make it very publicly known that phone is on.
Let's talk about this. Jason Mackey's in from the Post-Gazette, our Penguins insider. Matt Murray seems standoffish. He seems, dare I say, aloof. He seems like every answer is a short answer. He seems different and distant than he was right when he got into the league, where he was not always the most engaging guy, but he was a little bit more engaging. Is there something going on, maybe since his father's passing? Is there something going on that they're not having success? Maybe all of it. He seems kind of like a different bird over the last 18 months.
I see where you're getting at. And the people that just watch Matt Murray and his media scrums, I get why you think that. I think that's probably a popular opinion among Penguins fans. They see a guy who sits there and says, oh, I didn't remember that goal. Or, did you see that shot? And people immediately say, oh, Marc-Andre Fleury would never do that.
Take me behind the curtain then.
Okay. When you can... Here we go. We're in Barclays Center. I think it was before game three, I'm butchering this story.
Nassau.
And so we're up there, whatever. He and I start talking about like the sounds of hockey, the sounds of, you know, just like random things. The guy is one of the most engaging people in that room. He will have a conversation with you a lot of the time, on the record, off the record. If it's outside of a group, he's tremendously insightful, smart. And then the cameras click on. And it's almost like the opposite of some guys that you hear of around like NFL rooms. Like I heard about Ray Lewis being one of these guys that whenever the lights come on, oh, they're Mr. Charisma. Mm-hmm. It's almost like the opposite. Like Murray becomes boring. So anyway, I don't think there's a lot going on under the surface that, you know, isn't obvious. But I do understand why people have that sort of takeaway when they see how he handles himself. And like, honestly, me knowing him a little bit better, I honestly want to say something like, please stop it. I know it's frustrating. I know some of the questions can be dumb. I know you just played a game. Fans want to hear from you, and they want to hear you, like, you know,
expound,
give
a
darn
bit.
About that. They pay a lot of money for a ticket to do this stuff. They deserve you to sit here and address your play.
We take some of your calls next, 412-928-9370. We continue the, I guess, post-mortem works on the Pittsburgh Penguins as their season is over with our guy, our resident expert, Jason Mackey of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. That's next. Frank is in the car. Frank is on the fan. Happy Thursday to you, Frank. Go ahead.
Hey, thanks for taking my call, guys. Wanted to talk a little bit about Jim Rutherford and Mike Sullivan. Although, let's go back after the last two cups. The offseason, trade a first-round pick for Ryan Reeves. Probably about 10 games into the season, it was obvious Sullivan had no use. Was, you know, this guy didn't fit into the system. Okay, now invest in a first-round pick. Now, last year, Derek Brassard, a guy that's pretty much been a number one and number two center his whole career. I think his contract's up after this year. So this guy's playing for his last contract. Why they thought he would want to sit on the Penguin third line, play with some lesser talent, and do nothing for his future, I just don't get it. And again, after about five games, didn't work out of him being on the third line. They were trying to float him on the first line, second line. Another guy didn't fit in. Wouldn't you think, before you're investing first-round picks, the future of the team, Sullivan and Rutherford would sit down and Rutherford would go, hey, you know, I got some moves in the works here. Do these guys fit into your system?
One would think, Frank, but it speaks to a miscommunication or lack of communication between the two, doesn't it?
Oh, obviously. So, I mean, going forward, whether it be Mario, someone's going to have to sit down. I don't know if it's a personality conflict. I don't know if Sullivan is saying to Rutherford, hey, you know, we want two cups my way without you making all these moves. But, I mean, I went back and looked, you know, at some of those first two cups.
Right.
And whether the Penguins just got slower or the league just caught up, it was the most smothering type forecheck I've ever seen going back 10 or 15 years.
I'm with you. Carl Hagelin had something to do with that as well. Frank, are you from Pittsburgh?
Yeah, I am from Pittsburgh.
Gotcha. Thank you for the call, 412-928-9370.
Frank's making some good points, man.
He makes a lot of great points.
Careful of you to
confirm smothering that. The smothering forecheck makes is a great point, and it was built on speed. It was built on not letting you breathe. And you know what else it was built on? It was built on defensemen, I think, that they trusted staying in place, that they could go forecheck and wouldn't get beat deep.
Yep. And guys who could get the puck out of their zone quickly and effectively. The only thing I don't agree with what Frank said is about Derek Brassard. Say, there's nothing to criticize there with the process. You have a guy who has a history of producing in the playoffs. He's a speedy center who theoretically gives you what you want. You can't predict that this guy was going to be the sourpuss that he was in Pittsburgh. I mean, nobody could have foresaw that coming.
No, but I do think that he's started down the right path. And we talked about it earlier with moves that were made that line up with one guy, maybe the GM in one case, his specific outlook on what the team would look like. And then other deals made, as you pointed out, that line up with the way maybe the head coach wants the team to play. And I don't know if it's ever been contentious between those two, Jason. You would know better than we would.
It's because, not contentious.
Okay.
I can tell you that. Are they on the same page? I can't tell you that, but it's not contentious.
Go ahead.
Well, no. I mean, that's what it's all going to come back around to is which one of these two viewpoints ends up winning out.
Well, there's a go-between as well because they got 67 assistant GMs.
Not anymore.
Well,
it's just Guerin and Carmanos.
In looking at the situation, though, how can it get more streamlined, though?
I mean, they need to sit in a room and figure out what the heck we're trying to do here. What are we trying to do?
If it's not contentious, why isn't it?
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
That's a good point, Jim. Maybe a good point.
Maybe it would be more helpful if it were contentious and they just sat in a room and screamed at each other for an hour.
Because there can't be a comfortability with losing 0-4 to the Islanders. There just can't be a comfortability.
No, there can't be.
And there has to be.
They should be reexamining every blessed thing that they do. Exactly. And that includes the GM, that includes the coach, that includes the players, that includes
how they all work together. All right, is Jim Rutherford a good GM? Or did Jim Rutherford, did he act too quickly in trying to change the personality of this hockey team?
No, I think Jim Rutherford's a good GM. I don't think he acted too quickly. But I think they made a couple moves that ran counter. Like, I think if we're going to go back to what Frank was saying with Ryan Reeves, if Rutherford is at fault there, I don't have a problem with them getting Ryan Reeves. You need to clear that with the coach. You need to say, this is what I want to do. This is where this guy's going to play. Not, is this going to be okay, but we need to be one here, and I don't want to go get this guy and have him playing 3 minutes a night. And if Sullivan's going to continually protest and say, I don't want that, I don't want that, I don't want that, maybe as the GM at that point, you have to kind of think, okay, this isn't a move I should be giving.
Well,
it's much
like, and look, it all worked out differently, but it was the same song and dance happened with Daniel Sprong. when the GM just beat the drum, and then the guy's nowhere to be found when he should have started the season up here the 1 year and should have played.
Or Jack Johnson in game one of the playoffs for that matter.
Correct.
Yeah.
It's just there seems to be a thorough disconnect. We close up our hockey talk. We'll find out what the Penguins said in the room today. We'll revisit that a little bit tomorrow. Chris is off tomorrow, so it'll be Jim and I. We'll revisit that a little bit. But we're kind of closing the book on the season for the most part. Jason's been so kind to have joined us over the past little while, and he's going to take us through to the top of the hour here on the Fan Morning Show. Are the Penguins quite simply right now, because this was one of those big, again, overarching philosophical questions, is this, if you take from 07 or 08 to 17 or so, is this the end of an era? That's what people, or for as long as Sidney Crosby is employed by this team, is this era still happening?
I don't see it as an end of an era. I think a lot of people want to start talking about this championship window. Does this mean it's closed? I don't think so. I don't see it. I mean, do we look at Sidney Crosby's regular season and say, this guy can't play hockey anymore? No. He had a bad playoff series. He stunk at the playoffs. That's it. On balance, Sidney Crosby's been fine. Evgeny Malkin had a bad regular season. Until he stacks two or three of them together, mm-hmm. I'm not too worried about that. They have young talent around these guys. Yes, they need to transition here, and it's a key point where Rutherford needs to free up some money and get some younger guys in here to sustain this, but I have a tough time saying it's over.
Is it the end, though, of them playing, like we talked about earlier, continuing to play like they did in their 20s? And thinking
yes,
that they can get away.
Yes, they need to evolve.
It's a change. I think we all agree the philosophy needs to change this offseason, and they need to acquire players who fit into that philosophy.
And you know what? We're sitting here talking about this philosophy needs to change. They need to evolve. What they need to do is get guys on the wing that help them, that they're not counted upon as the primary offensive source. They need to get that. Repurpose some of those dollars into guys who can carry offense on those lines.
Well, Jared Gensel is one. Gensel and McCann seem like primary.
Yeah, but
McCann's
a third wheel, and I don't say that in an insulting sense.
You mean like Derek Brassard? No, I'm serious. Like guys like that who are supposed to turn out and work and be good.
Oh, you need to go get guys like Phil Kessel is sort of one, but you need a younger version of that, a guy who's not going to age out of that contract. Well. No,
I mean, serious. Like, you need guys that are supposed to play, that are supposed to live up to what their pedigree is.
Right, and you need guys, and you can pay for them. It's okay. Look at the Islanders, right? Like, you need to go get a Matt Barzal. You need to find that guy, and you can pay him a little bit of money, but a young guy on a premium contract that's going to come up there on the wing and help out Evgeny Malkin and Sidney Crosby. They have one in Jake Gensel. You need to find another one for Evgeny Malkin. And it's okay if you repurpose one of your defensemen, if you repurpose Phil Kessel, those dollars into that guy, but they need to get an offensive driver.
When we talk about repurposing defensemen, who's more likely to be repurposed? Is it Gudbranson? Is it Mata? Is there any chance of moving Johnson?
I mean, there's a chance they will listen and try, but I just don't see who at this point will take them.
Man, I don't know if I could do Jack Johnson for four more years. I'm sorry.
You might not have a choice, pal.
I know. That's the.
You might.
I thought after the outdoor game he'd made a splash, he was coming back, he was going to be okay, and I think sometimes some of the criticism is way over the top.
Yes.
But if you look at the total body of work and the totality, it just doesn't match up to the dollar amount.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't, and it doesn't match up to what they have to pay either. Like, they have a guy, Juuso Riikola, in the minors who's making peanuts, who could come in here and do that job for way cheaper. Jack Johnson is adding nothing to justify the term on that contract. You know, if it was one more year for 3.25, you could say, okay, whatever, we'll live with it. Four more years.
Oh, my God.
For a third-pairing defenseman.
For a third-pairing defenseman.
Yeah.
Who has been badly outplayed when used
when
in any other
capacity.
When you've
got four guys that are clearly much better and who... I think your top four are filled out going into the offseason.
Are they?
Letang, Dumoulin, Schultz, and Pettersson. I think Pettersson made strides this year that put him in the top four.
Yeah, but I would, if you're going to keep Gudbranson, and I think moving Gudbranson might be tricky because of his age and cap hit. He's, I think, going to be 28 and makes $4 million, adds no offense. Mm-hmm. And he's actually been pretty good for them. I don't know if I'd be looking to move Gudbranson. But that third pairing with Pettersson and Gudbranson has been pretty good. But I look at that, and that spot next to Schultz needs to get filled by somebody. And I don't know if I see Johnson as being that guy. I don't know if I see Mata being that guy, but you need to get... And again, I look at Riikola, who makes nothing, and I say, okay, I can just plop him in that spot, and I can save if I can find a way to get rid of Ole and Jack. I mean, that's 7.25, and you're only going to pay Riikola one for basically the same sort of production.
Here's a thought that it's actually occurred to me in the past. And let's just say, let's say Dallas knocks out Nashville. All right, so Nashville gets bumped in the first round, and they're thinking, oh, man, what's going on here? Would it be possible to make a match with one of Nashville's defensemen and Kessel? In other words, if they're thinking, yeah, you know what, we need more scoring punch, and because that might be a salary thing that might work out. I don't know. I'm just trying to think.
No, I know what you're going for, Jim. I just got a tough time seeing Nashville, like maybe some of the culture that they have there, like wanting to take on a Phil Kessel.
Or you get walking into his general manager's office, yeah, and saying we need this guy.
That might be what you do. That might be the move you make. And Talk says, I can handle it. Mm-hmm. I'll make it work. Just get me the guy. And
we're getting 1,300 people a game right now. We need to create some more excitement. We're not necessarily build a marketing campaign around him because he doesn't talk all that much, but he's going to score goals for us.
And he's going to be like quirky. And he might do it out there. I don't know. It would just be a different animal. And you would think that Kessel would want to go out there too, right? Mm-hmm. Like that would be okay on his list. Go play for Talk It and be in relative anonymity.
But people need to, I think, pare back their expectations of what's going to happen, what the return is going to be, is what you're saying, and whether it be a Kessel or Horn. Like, they're not getting Oliver Ekman-Larsson for Phil Kessel. That's not happening.
Why not?
Exactly. But people need these trades, if they make them in the offseason, are going to be about shedding contracts.
They're dumps. Yeah. The gain is having that. I mean, the Penguins are obviously going to spend to the salary cap ceiling. The gain is having that wiggle room. And trying to
add that young winger,
you don't have to
about,
take back a total garbage contract.
You consume sports in this town, you're quite familiar with salary dumps, so we're okay. 412-928-9370 is that number. Adam Berry, MLB.com, he joins us at the top of the hour. Jason, it's been our treat.
Yeah. Well, thank you, guys.
Get yourself a vacation,
yeah,
please.
Enjoy one more time in the room today,
yep,
and then go fishing. You know, some fun.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.